Hello everyone, welcoming you all to our very first episode of a new series, Meet the Guest. And it's an honor and privilege to have an editor who has edited some of the most critically acclaimed and commercially successful projects of recent times, none other than Mr. Tony Kearns. Thank you so much, Mr. Tony, for being here with us today.
You're welcome, Raj, and I'm delighted to be with you today.
Thank you so much. I was doing a bit of research, and I was going through your Instagram profile. And in one of the post that you made about Joan is Awful, someone has commented that you're the editor who has edited most of the Black Mirror episodes. How do you feel about it?
It's a great honor. I mean, obviously, it's a fantastic body of work. And I started relatively late. I did the first Black Mirror project was Metalhead in 2017, which was series 4.
Yeah.
I'm late to the party in a sense, but I've made up for lost time since, in that I've edited 4 projects, Metalhead, Bandersnatch, Rachel Jack and Ashley 2. Right. And now Joan is Awful. So, yeah, I was conscious of the fact that there was another editor who had done 3 episodes, 3 projects. And I was, when I got the news that I was being taken on for Joan is Awful, I pumped the air and gave myself a high five in celebration. So there you go. But it's kind of interesting because it's 3 episodes and 1 standalone. Bandersnatch was a sort of a standalone film in series 5. Series 5 was kind of an emasculated series in the sense that there was only 3 episodes other than Bandersnatch. Bandersnatch ended up taking quite a considerable amount of resources in terms of time and etc. So yeah, it was a bit of an odd series. Anyway, so there you go. Yes, I have that honor now.
Sure. I have questions regarding Bandersnatch. But before going to that, as I'm talking about Instagram, you're quite a good photographer as well. You have a passion for that, I can sense. But you only, like most of the photographs that I have seen of yours, you only do those in black and white. And the other photographers who only focus on black and white, they have their own explanation why they do that. What's your explanation?
It's back in the when I started. I mean, I've always been interested in photography, and it's been a side thing. It's been a passion of mine since my early days. My Instagram profile is mostly photographs I've taken from wandering around Soho in London and in Dublin and various other places in the late 80s, early 90s. And I took photographs in black and white for the practical reason the reason that a lot of the people I was influenced by, it was mostly black and white photography, like Robert Duagno and Mark Rebo and Irving Penn, you know, and those people and Diane Arbus. So it's also there's a practical reason that it was cheaper. And easier to handle, but also I think there's a certain. I mean, I have done I've done various things where I've looked at a color version. In recent years, I've been shooting digital. When you shoot color, I shoot color, and then I can render it to black and white. But I find that the emotional response to black and white is actually clearer and more direct. So a lot of the extraneous detail, unless it's the color is really there's something really interesting about the color of the image, sure. I find that the black and white's more direct emotionally. So, but I mean, originally it started out that it was the most practical and most cost effective thing. Because I was working as an assistant editor, didn't have a lot of cash then, you know. And if you want one way to guarantee you can never be able to buy a nice big house, take up photography.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's an expensive passion for sure. But I also do photography a little bit, and I was going on and on and on. I was scrolling through your profile and good works, really good works.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you.
Going back to your editing, Black Mirror definitely is known for its like intricate and thought-provoking narratives. This question may sound a bit serious, but I've been thinking these questions regarding these questions for quite long now. How did you approach the editing process to effectively convey the show's unique blending of technology, diaspora, social commentary? And, you know, you may think when you're editing that this show should not only look like it's a sci-fi focused thing, or not just drama focus or mystery focus, but it should have a good balance of bit of everything. Same question for the end of the F world. I'm using F, the word, as well, because how did you approach editing the series to maintain its like unique tone and balance between dark comedy and drama? So what was your approach?
Well, the approach is first and foremost comes from the script. I mean, I'm working with what's been filmed, what's been shot according to the script, and what has been maybe added to on set when they come to doing the shooting. And also, I'm a part of a team. I work with the director, and then we work with the writer, right, and the executive producers. So, and on both projects, in terms of working with Charlie Brooker on Black Mirror and Charlie Cavell on The End of the Fucking World, that it was they had a very strong input into the edit. Okay. And they have it's a kind of a discussion. So there's things that the director brings, there are things that I would bring, and in terms of how I would put the scene together.
Right.
We're all serving the story, and we're all sort of working with the writer, in terms of what happens on screen, and then both Charlie Cavell and Charlie Brooker weren't precious about the written word. They understood the idea that once it goes on screen, it becomes a different thing, and you're rewriting the story and conveying it. So. It's a collaborative effort. My contribution, my skill is that I can be quite quick and get the soul of the scene in the edit quite rapidly, so that people can then respond to it and then develop it. Yeah. So that it becomes the structure is achieved, and then it's the fine tuning that happens both when I'm on my own and then with the director and then with the writers and the executive producers, that it becomes an easier process, because it's there, just has to be made better. And then you add the ingredients of sound, the music and whatever soundtrack, whatever you add, which enhances it. So it's an ongoing process, collaborative process, that makes the piece evolve scene by scene, section by section, act by act, and then the whole overall thing.
The whole project, yeah.
And the difference is that between the two setups is that with Black Mirror, which is a great part of the process, is it's a standalone. Each episode is a standalone story, so you have you have the chance to start it and finish it and get the whole thing done. Whereas with an episodic thing like The End of the Fucking World is that it's I worked on four episodes in series two, the first four.
Yeah.
So I don't have the sort of sense of the whole arc, but you get used to that and you work within the section you have, so that it's then carried on throughout. So it's in a way the in terms of an episodic drama, it's the showrunner, the writer, the execs that kind of maintain the spirit and the essence of the storytelling,
right,
into the second, what's called a second block. So I worked on the first block of that series.
Yeah, you kind of have answered the question that I had. I was thinking I would ask you later on. Is that I have gone through interviews of filmmakers from early 60s, 70s, or 80s, And the summary of their explanation regarding editing is that when the film is fully done shoot, when it goes to the editor's table, now the film belongs to the editor and he will decide how the film will look. So, but I think you will agree nowadays the approach is not quite the same. It's a collaborative approach altogether.
I think it was always, I mean, as far as I can see, there's no other way of doing it. I mean, there was certainly maybe a degree of greater autonomy because the technology was more restrictive to being able to do things straight away. Yeah. I mean, like the old, you know, cutting on film or whatever, perhaps, I don't know, I wasn't around then. But I think it's there's always been a collaboration, certainly between director and editor, the editor and the director. And then obviously the studio people have their say, and you deal with it. You deal with that, whether it's positive or negative experience. I've been very, touch wood, very fortunate in that I have had, you know, very positive experiences in the collaborative process. I don't feel that I have the absolute right to dictate, mm-hmm. but I have the privilege, and that my job is to guide. I'm the person pushing the buttons, arranging things, making sure the requests are work, and or debating, say, whether a request to change a certain thing in a scene, is that a good idea or not? Right. And then saying, look, okay, let's see what we find out, and exploring and responding. And by that process, I'm the brain and the eyes and the hands that makes it happen, but it's also I'm a conduit as well, as well as my own thing. And also, I mean, what I bring to the editing table is an ability to think to create the solution to a challenge or a problem or a request.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, it's all about serving the story, serving the piece, serving the final thing that goes out, and then not serving your ego.
Sure. So we have got a question from one of our listeners, and she was desperate to ask this. And it's okay if you don't have answer for this, but she has asked, why did they stop making The End of the Fucking World after season 2, as it was so popular? Any take on that?
Well, there's a more of a tendency in British based. Mm-hmm. Series that to go out on a high,
okay, yeah,
rather than staying around and letting it kind of wither.
Yeah.
Okay. And also that there was no more, I mean, I think there was certainly just the feeling was there was no more, I mean, as much as James and Alyssa's story was amazing, there was no more story to tell. It had reached the end.
Right.
And of course, and one of the dangers of say, wishing, you know, like there'd be a certain element of, in certain things, productions where it's been so popular, the producers say, let's do another one because we'll do well and it'll do well again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then what happens? You get a situation where it becomes clear that it's run out of road. So the idea, I think there's a braver attitude in a way to say, you know what, we feel this is it and we should just savor what we have. And then that's it. It's done.
Yeah.
In this side of in Britain and Ireland, in terms of series, and there's quite you know there's so many examples of series that have gone on to three, you know, season 3, 4, 5, and it's gone. It's like people are going, it's spoiled.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I mean, I know people crave this, but it's very difficult. It's a kind of double edged sword that. If it could end up being actually, it just becomes less. It becomes less, and then it becomes a disappointment, and it is a sour taste. There's a lot of British series that only were two series that are still talked about now, 30, 40 years later, because of the such a perfect nugget of storytelling. So there, I'm sorry that that's the sort of the realistic and disappointing answer, but they're there to go back and watch again.
Yeah, right. You know? But I think I was disappointed with two of these kind of announcements. One is The End of the Fucking World, and another one is The Mindhunter. They said they're not going to make it anymore. I think after season 2 or 3, But in recent time, yeah, these two things. But yeah, I think it's a very brave move, like to not just make the thing because it's famous, but just to stop it at the right point and right time. So, yeah.
At this point of the podcast, I want to acknowledge something, and I'm sharing this with a heavy heart. A week back, when we started editing the episode, we found out that only the first 15 minutes is there in the GenCaster server. GenCaster is the tool that we use to record our podcast remotely. However, when we recorded the episode, no such glitch was witnessed. For the whole week, every day, we have tried to find out the reason, tried to recover the other part, and fix this issue. In order to solve this issue, we have tried to contact all the possible sources and have used all the expertise we had. However, we have been unable to get any positive result. Such issue has taken place for the very first time in our 2 years of career. The hard part for us to accept that our listener will be unable to hear and experience the extraordinary journey, insights, and pros and cons of an editor's life shared by Tony Kianz himself. So we say once to convey an apology to the listeners and of course to the esteemed guest. This channel will always cherish the time Tony Kianz had given us from his busy schedule. Maybe the fate was written like this. Maybe it was like only me and Shamil Huda Digonto would have the chance to listen and talk to Tony Kianz for a whole 1 hour. Here I would like to share two positive notes. First, we will keep on trying to recover the rest of the episode so that we can come up with a part 2 version. And second, Tony Kianz will surely keep on giving us extraordinary works. Therefore, we'd like to believe this is not certainly the last episode with him. We will try hard to arrange another session with Tony Kianz in near future to talk about the works, which will be as fabulous as his previous and present works. Thank you.
হেই, থ্যাংক ইউ ফর লিসেনিং। আশা করি পুরো এপিসোডটি আপনারা এনজয় করেছেন। ভালো লাগুক বা খারাপ, আপনাদের মতামত জানিয়ে এপিসোডটি শেয়ার করুন অন্যের সাথে। ক্যাপশনে হ্যাশট্যাগ সোউইসে লিখতে ভুলবেন না। এছাড়াও অন্য কোনো মতামত বা এপিসোড আইডিয়া থাকলে ইনস্টাগ্রামে আমাদেরকে ডিএম করুন। ইনস্টাগ্রাম আইডি চ্যানেল ডিসক্রিপশনে পেয়ে যাবেন। ইউ ক্যান অলসো মেইল আস অ্যাট contactsoise@gmail.com। শীঘ্রই আসছি নতুন এপিসোড নিয়ে। টিল দেন, ডোন্ট ওয়ারি, the world is not gonna end soon, so we say.